A free waterway in the South China Sea is very important to the trade.
ASEAN representatives meet in Washington on regional issues. It's Friday, May 5th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online right now on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Donald Trump is a presidential campaign issue in South Korea. We meet an emerging young leader from Vietnam. VOA Asia visits a new exhibit of World War II Japanese Americans. Microbes for dinner and a floating trash can. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Southeast Asia nations are still trying to determine how they fit in with emerging U.S. policy in Asia on a number of specific issues since President Donald Trump took office in January. A meeting of representatives from all 10 members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, was held Thursday at the State Department in Washington, chaired by Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching joins us with more on what was discussed.
Today, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met with all members from this 10-nation ASEAN bloc for the first time. Before, he met bilaterally with some of the foreign ministers from the, some countries, including Vietnam. So what's important from this meeting is the discussion on North Korea. Very specifically, the U.S. is asking countries from ASEAN bloc to take efforts to deny the revenue streams that the North Korea has enjoyed around the region. We know that all the 10 members of ASEAN has diplomatic relations with North Korea. For example, North Korea have embassies in 8 out of these 10 countries, and 5 of those countries have embassies in Pyongyang. So the U.S. is looking for the ASEAN bloc to minimize and take a look at the how to minimize the diplomatic relations and then to put more pressure.
The South China Sea has also been a big issue as China continues to build on some of these island features and structures throughout the region.
Exactly. So Secretary of State made a very specific appeal during the meeting that he appealed that all countries in this region to stop right away the militarization, the construction and reclamation of land in the South China Sea region, because a free waterway in the South China Sea is very important to the trade and then also to the regional and then global security, in his words.
This meeting follows the trip by Vice President Mike Pence to the region. He met with several leaders from different countries while he was over there. And the ASEAN member nations have been wondering where the United States really stands in the region following President Trump's withdrawal from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement.
Exactly. So trade is another topic that's important between U.S. and ASEAN country. So what we heard today is Secretary Tillerson is actually traveling to the Philippines in August to attend the ASEAN Regional Forum, the East Asia Summit Ministerial and the U.S.-ASEAN Ministerial meetings. Back to the question on the trade. ASEAN as a bloc is a is a top market for U.S. exports, and then they also support a lot of American jobs. So instead of after the United States is withdrawing from TPP, we heard that some of the bilateral trade negotiations are on the way or may be considered. For example, the U.S.-Vietnam bilateral trade relations.
Quite a bit happening at the State Department, and very interesting news as Secretary of State Tillerson will be heading to the Philippines, a key player in the region. Nike Ching is our State Department correspondent. Nike, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We invite you to read more on this and all of our stories online by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Trump anxiety, an issue in South Korean presidential election. Trump to invite Thai leader, it may signal a new era. Asian Development Bank weighs growth income inequality. China compiles its own Wikipedia, but the public can't edit it. This time, a sandstorm fouls China's air. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. U.S. President Donald Trump could be a key factor in the South Korean presidential election next week on May 9th. VOA's Brian Padden in Seoul reports Trump's controversial criticisms of its key military ally in Asia is fueling support for the presidential candidate most opposed to the U.S. hardline policy on North Korea.
Moon Jae-in supporters are literally dancing in the street. The Liberal Democratic Party of Korea candidate surged to a 20 percentage point lead over his rivals in the last public opinion poll taken before the election. Moon's lead in the polls actually increased after he opposed President Trump's demand for South Korea to pay $1 billion for the THAAD missile defense system.
Our party thinks THAAD must be renegotiated to adjust any cost-sharing expenses as it was done by the previous government.
The frontrunner supports the U.S. alliance but argues that American policies emphasizing military pressure and sanctions alone will not resolve the North Korean nuclear threat. Moon wants to ease tensions through dialogue and engagement and has called for delaying the THAAD deployment that has sparked public safety concerns and Chinese economic retaliation on tourism and imports. Liberal rival An Cho-sul, the People's Party candidate, supported more pro-American positions on THAAD and defense, but has seen his rating drop in the polls, even though he sharply opposed Trump's $1 billion demand. The conservatives, led by Liberty Korea Party candidate Hong Joon-pyo, have struggled to regain public trust in the wake of the impeachment of ex-president Park Geun-hye over an alleged corruption scandal. Her removal from office precipitated this early presidential election. Hong supporters say their candidate's hardline support for THAAD and for deploying tactical nuclear weapons in South Korea will win support from a pro-national security silent majority overlooked by the liberal media.
Currently in South Korea, many people are hiding their thoughts and votes.
But Trump's comments, not just on THAAD, but also calling North Korean leader Kim Jong-un a smart cookie for brutally consolidating power, has depressed support for the U.S. among some far-right conservatives occupying a protest camp in front of Seoul's City Hall.
I am heartbroken over the U.S. because of Trump's recent comments.
Anxiety over Trump may further depress the conservative vote while energizing liberals that want the next South Korean president to stand up to American pressure. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, a top Philippine official faces questioning next week at the UN Human Rights Council on issues such as extrajudicial killings and vigilante justice alleged to be occurring in President Rodrigo Duterte's deadly fight against illegal drugs. It's left more than 7,000 suspected drug dealers and users dead. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. This year's 10 recipients of the annual State Department's Emerging Young Leaders Award were honored Thursday in Washington for their efforts to create positive social change in challenging environments. They come from around the world, this year representing Malta, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Vietnam, Algeria, Tajikistan, Belgium, Peru, and reaching Palestinians in Jerusalem. Nguyen Liu uses social media and creative arts to engage Vietnamese youth on key issues. In May 2015, together with a group of comic artists, she founded and led a campaign named Turakabi, which means Challenge Your Knowledge. The project raised awareness among Vietnamese youth about the government budgeting process and called for greater transparency. Nguyen Liu tells about her video project, one of the most successful youth-led advocacy programs in Vietnam.
About social issues in Vietnam, at present we have two type of platform that do open a discussion about these controversial social issues in Vietnam. The first, we have a website. This website digs deep into the problem, but due to the boring presenting, they have like little discussion generate after this in this website. And the second one is the forum and the Facebook page. In this page, they just merely raise the topic and do not deliver any information or knowledge. So these debate actually just argument because it's just based on personal opinion. So the difference in our project is we want to, like, we present social issues in interactive, informative, and creative media platform and media production. So I think that's the main reason that why people are so interested in our project.
Well, thanks to comics, art-based videos, and paintings, after only 2 months, Turakabi received over 12,600 digital signatures on a petition calling for transparency in the government budget that was submitted to National Assembly representatives. Since April 2014, Nguyen's project team Little Frog has produced videos on a variety of social issues, such as eating dog meat, protecting LGBT rights, the education system, and enhancing women's rights. Nguyen was also invited to participate as a trainer for a project funded by the U.S. government Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative, in which she taught participants video-making skills. Nguyen's videos have earned over 1 million views and 15,000 subscribers on YouTube. The video series represents the choice of the new generation in Vietnam. Our congratulations to Nguyen Liu and all of the other recipients of the State Department's Emerging Young Leaders Award. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Asian Development Bank is holding its annual meeting in Japan, where bankers and leaders are assessing how to support growth as income inequality grows in both rich and poor countries. The ADB estimates more than $26 trillion will be needed by 2030 to build roads, ports, and more. Stay up to date on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue, the Smithsonian's Museum of American History has opened a new exhibit titled Righting a Wrong, Japanese Americans and World War II. Following the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii, thousands of people of Japanese descent, including many of those who were U.S. citizens, were sent to camps along the U.S. West Coast amid fears of possible attacks inside the country. VOA Asia's Ali Ogden met with Lisa Sasaki, director of the Smithsonian's Asian Pacific American Center, during a special Facebook Live event today as they looked at the exhibit, which has a special meaning for Sasaki. Let's hear an excerpt about what happened to her and her family during World War II.
You know, I had suggested coming here to the museum in order to be able to see this exhibit because my family has a personal story that's related to this. My grandparents, great-grandparents, and an uncle and aunt were incarcerated during World War II, and this exhibition is an opportunity to tell that story.
Great. It is a part of American history that is quite hard to believe, really, for, you know, some people who are used to the civil liberties that we have today, to imagine that so many Japanese Americans were interned in camps for a period of 4 years. They were both American citizens and also people who are of Japanese ancestry that were here in the United States, correct?
Correct. In fact, two-thirds of those who were incarcerated were American citizens. And so, this is an aspect of American history that a lot of people don't know about, that they're unaware that, the rights of citizens were taken away during this time period, and that has been acknowledged by the government through the Civil Liberties Act of 1988 that was signed by President Ronald Reagan.
Your grandparents were American citizens. They were living in California at the time.
Yes.
And, bring us back to that period. What happened to them?
Basically, my grandparents were young adults when the war broke out, and they were living in California. And what ended up occurring during that time period was that the executive orders, which we're just about to see in the exhibitions, were signed by Franklin Roosevelt. And what that did was it created a zone along the West Coast that anybody of Japanese ancestry was forced to move from those locations. And as a result, my grandparents had very little time, as well as their family, to figure out how to, pack their lives up into two suitcases that they could carry. And then they were first at Tanforan Relocation Center, and then incarcerated at Tule Lake, and then in Jerome, Arkansas.
That must have been an awful experience for them to be uprooted from their lives like that.
It was devastating. My family lost everything, and they didn't know what was going to happen from one day to the next. And for a long time, they didn't even really want to even talk about it. Once the war ended, they were able to resettle in Colorado, and that's actually where my mother and where myself, where we were all born as a result of that. But they never really wanted to talk about it because it was just so traumatic. Mm-hmm. It was an instance where I think if you could imagine, being in your late teens, early 20s, which was the age of my grandparents, and then suddenly having all of these things affecting you when you've never done anything wrong. You were just, going to school, working, living your life, and then to have this moment happen to you was really devastating for them.
I can't imagine. And it's interesting that they, after that experience, decided to stay in the United States regardless.
Yes, there are some families who decided to leave the United States and even though they were American citizens, go back to Japan. However, my family felt, and my grandmother, my grandparents really felt that they were Americans. They knew no other way of life. This was their country. This is where they were born. And I think, despite what occurred, they felt that this was their home, and it was their home. Mm-hmm. And so there was no reason for them to leave. They just simply rebuilt their life, as did the other families that were impacted by this.
Lisa Sasaki, director of the Smithsonian's Asian Pacific American Center, speaking with VOA Asia's Ali Ogden. Visit our Facebook page at VOA Asia to see and hear the entire interview. The exhibit at the Smithsonian's Museum of American History is Righting a Wrong, Japanese Americans and World War II. It runs through February of next year. Check it out if you're coming to Washington before then. Developing at this hour in Asia, a sandstorm blown by gusting winds enveloped a huge area of central and northern China. Tens of millions of residents across 8 provinces and autonomous regions and in municipal Beijing were told to use masks or scarves when outside to protect their eyes and lungs. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, if you're feeling a bit hungry, new research says what you want to eat may actually be determined by microbes in your gut. While the findings only apply to fruit flies at the moment, VOA's Steve Barragona has noticed that they add to the evidence that microbes influence the behavior of the creatures that they inhabit, from flies to people.
Carlos Ribeiro studies how the brain decides what to eat. He's a neuroscientist at the Champalimaud Foundation in Portugal. He says fruit flies are a good place to start. They're much simpler than humans. That includes the microbes living in their guts.
The microbiome of humans is very complex. There's hundreds of species. Flies really only have 5 major species of gut microbes.
Ribeiro and colleagues raised flies in a sterile environment with no microbes and fed them a tightly controlled diet. When the researchers deprived them of protein, the flies sought out yeast. But when sterile, protein-starved flies were inoculated with two of the five normal gut bacteria, they were no longer so hungry for yeast.
We're not talking about a slight reduction. It's really the flies do not show increase in protein appetite when they have these two bacteria.
In essence, the microbes were telling the flies what to eat. Also, while protein-hungry flies normally produce a lot fewer eggs, flies carrying these two bacteria did not see as big a drop in fertility. Ribeiro does not know why the bacteria would have these effects, but he noted that flies don't live as long when they eat more protein-rich food.
Maybe what the bacteria do to the fly is it allows it to maximize reproduction while minimizing the shortening of its lifespan.
It's another example of the influence microbes have on the creatures they inhabit, says University College Cork neuroscientist John Cryan. Cryan has studied how gut microbes affect anxiety and behavior in mice.
Really what I've come to realize over the years is that there's very little elements of neurodevelopment and brain that are not in some ways regulated by microbes. So, and we have to remember that, you know, the microbes were there first before all species. So we've all developed, including flies, in a microbial milieu.
While the fly study makes it tempting to blame our meat cravings on our microbiomes, Cryan cautions.
We have no idea whether any of this could be upscaled to a mammal.
And Carlos Ribeiro also has no idea how the bacteria are exerting their influence. His group plans to look for clues in the flies' brains and in the chemicals the bacteria produce. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
In Baltimore, there's an unusual machine at work. It has just celebrated its third birthday, and, get this, it has more than 20,000 followers on Facebook and Twitter. It's called Mr. Trash Wheel. VOA's George Pudich has more on this hybrid-powered contraption responsible for preventing the city's trash from reaching its inner harbor.
Dead leaves, branches, logs, plastic bottles, cups, food containers, and other floating trash stop here, where the biggest collector of rainwater from Baltimore's streets, the Jones Falls River, flows into the city's harbor.
So right here is where the trash is most concentrated. And this river is the origin of 70 to 85% of the trash that comes and messes up the harbor.
7 years ago, after watching islands of floating trash under this bridge on his daily walk to work, John Kellett decided to do something about it. His initial machine could only collect a small amount of trash before it had to be emptied. So 4 years later, he built a larger one, powered by the river's flow.
The wheel is connected to the conveyor and the rakes, and the conveyor and the rakes are what we use to get the trash out of the river and get it into the dumpster.
When the stream flows slowly, auxiliary power comes from 30 solar panels, making electricity for a pump that turns the water wheel through three spigots. Internet connection allows it to be controlled remotely. After a heavy rain, the dumpster floating on a pontoon barge quickly fills with trash. The nonprofit Healthy Harbor Initiative says so far the machine has collected 1.14 million tons of garbage.
And it goes to a waste-to-energy facility where they incinerate it to become electricity. And we're working with some recyclers. There's a lot of stuff that we pick up that is recyclable. Unfortunately, it's commingled with a lot of stuff that is not recyclable, so sorting it is one of the big challenges.
In the meantime, another trash collecting machine was installed in a different part of the harbor. But Baltimore is a big city.
We are actually working with businesses around the harbor to try and build a third trash wheel. And hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, we're going to see these trash wheels popping up in cities around the world.
Indeed, the popularity of Baltimore's trash-collecting machine prompted many port cities to call and inquire about the technology. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
Well, while an automated trash collector can have 20,000 followers online, we hope that you follow us. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia, and you may even be listening to our program via Facebook. If you are, thank you very much. We also want to hear from you. Write to us on Facebook, or you could send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. Our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.